Some radio stations bring you traditional Christmas tunes at this time in December. At Siren, we bring you the best in Yuletide music and the end of the Mayan calendar. Settle back and enjoy. It could be the last show you'll ever catch before ascending to the next level.
Always very significant turning points, I find, in human history. One of them was the birth of Katie Grimmison. She's online now. Hello, Katie.
Hello.
Oh, there you are, you see. Yeah, we thought we'd get through in the end. We kept on. So which bits of the show have you enjoyed, then? Have you been following us through? I mean, obviously not when you've been asleep, unless it's been sort of sifting through the consciousness in Birmingham. What's been happening down Birmingham way, my girl?
Yesterday I really liked Eight Coronas. And
I thought you might. Joe
Lee Tilbury.
Yeah, Sean, top form, Joe Lee. Yeah. So that was nice stuff from that. And did you like the carol singing?
Yes, it was very nice.
Oh, good. So, I mean, has it been a sort of show where you thought, yeah, if I wanted to sort of donate 25 hours of my particular life, this is the sort of show I'd like to actually sort of donate 25 hours of my life to?
I suppose so, but I don't know if I'd last for 25 hours.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you would. I mean,
how are you? Like, are you tired or anything?
You can't go down that line, Katie, because it's a mind thing. You know, you've got to just keep on going. Otherwise, who knows what could happen? You know, it's like that Mayan scenario. It's Mayan mind. You know, if we actually thought about tiredness, we never go.
Katie Grimmison, Birmingham's gift to the galaxy on the midweek drive for Siren FM. And more.
And more. That's exactly so. And, of course, there's always the classic...
Tiffany Freeman and Katie Grimmison bring so much more to the midweek drive than just their effervescent views from Leicester and Birmingham. In fact, they're the audio equivalent of a Bucks fizz. But is Tiffany the champagne and Katie the orange juice? Or vice versa?
We don't know, but Tiffany had her first byline. Did you see the photograph we put of Tiffany pointing to her byline in the Lincolnshire Echo last night?
Yeah, I'd like to say congratulations to Tiff.
Congratulations to Tiffany Freeman. Would you like to say congratulations to Tasha Tony as well? Because she's, of course, had her stuff for the BBC Voxes that she was actually doing. Well, I can't quite... She was doing something very important, Ed, I seem to recall. But it was...
Yes.
It was very important. Congratulations, yes. Tasha. We know what you did was very important. Sorry we can't remember what it was. You know, it had that kind of impact on us.
Housing. Katie. Housing. It was to do with housing.
Yeah, that's very important.
It was important. Yeah.
It keeps us going. Let's just test Katie here. Do you know who's in the studio at present, Katie?
Is Nicola still there?
No. Nicky, are you still there? Yeah,
Nicky. Morning, Katie. Yeah. How are you?
And
hello.
Yes, Joff is here. Good morning.
There we are. Joff and Katie and Nicola and Nicky and Katie. Yay! And Ed. So you know everybody who's actually around. So Malcolm Thomas says, on his way, we gather. Ian's looking very busy out there. I didn't quite know what he was doing. I'm sure he's here whether he's eating the cakes, etc. We still haven't seen Chris Ilsley, as far as I'm aware, have you? I mean, you know, it's difficult to quite see, because I need to sort of go back here to see what's going on. No, various other folks there. I think it's Tom Davis. He probably thinks it's food. No, Tom, it's not. Just do your jazz. Do your jazz thing and do that. Sorry, sometimes you have to sort of just lay that sort of presentational law down on that basis. Otherwise, you could have a nightmare on your hand. Katie, whom would you like to question? Who would you like to ask questions of for these few moments before we go off to a Mike Dooley interview?
I'll question Nikki.
Oh. All right, I'm ready.
Are you looking forward to the bake-off?
Yeah. The cake-off, yes, yeah. The bake-off. I'm not going to say what I just heard in my earphone, but yes, I am ready for the cake-off. I've seen the cakes. I don't know whose is whose. They look fantastic.
You might actually have to ask yourself and Joff, given that we're going to try and get some photographs up online, but for William Sitwell's benefit, you'll need to actually describe the cakes.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about this because we had this thing last night with Phil about words and how words are inadequate, and obviously the writer in me was itching to say, oh, hang on, words are totally adequate to describe just about anything, and we will prove that today, won't we? Just we will describe this cakes,
we
and
will.
You will see them in front of you even though you're not here. But yes, Katie, I'm looking forward to it.
And we will eventually get put up, obviously, on Facebook. It's just having to juggle a number of other bits and pieces around, and you know, sometimes we just have to work through that. Marina Fiorato is coming up as well very shortly to join us telephonically. What can we say? I mean, Katie, do you have a particular musical treat you'd like us to dig out? Because I know you always like to sort of put in your requests, and, you know, I mean, are we going Eight Coronas? I mean, what would you like?
I'm going to go with The Cribs again.
Are you really?
Yeah.
The Cribs again? Good.
With Men's Knees.
Yeah, with men's needs. That's just say that again. Men's needs, not men's knees. Easily confused. Men's knees obviously can cause lots of challenges, particularly if they get knobbly as the years go by.
Knobbly knees, yeah.
But no, this is men's needs. You know, it's easily confused in the whole setup. Men's needs by the Cribs. Would you like to hold those last two questions down the way to Birmingham, please, Nikki?
Katie, have you had a very interesting and entertaining telephonic link with us this morning?
Yeah, I have. It's nice to chat with everyone again.
Excellent. And
we missed you, Katie.
We miss you a lot.
Come back,
actually.
Katie. Come back.
And can we look forward to joining up with you again in the next few hours before the end of the show?
Yeah. Of course.
Rock and roll.
Excellent. Keep that phone switched on then.
Here come the Cribs. Men's knees. No, needs. Needs.
Find Tom Stevens under your Christmas tree with the Siren Simply Jazz Show on Christmas Day.
See, I find that quite scary. Anyway, we find him in the studio. Tom, how are you?
I'm all right, yeah.
Very good. So it's a Christmas Day show that you're doing, packaged together now. Is that because Santa's not going to bring you any presents?
No, I'm just doing it because I like to do the Christmas Day show.
So what's happening on the Christmas Day show, Tom?
Well, there's a pack full of Christmas tracks from the big bands in jazz, and there's an interview with Frank D'Angelo from Canada.
Very good. Marvellous. So, and is that it? Packed full of fabulous tracks.
Oh, packed full of tracks and
and Frank D'Angelo from Canada.
Yeah. And all my guests, they've done a Christmas drop.
All your guests have done it. Have you got that Rebecca Poole to do a Christmas drop for you?
No, I haven't, no.
Oh, well, we'll ask her later on today. She may not. I don't know. Whatever.
I might do that.
Tom, thank you. Enjoy the rest of the day. Well done.
Good luck.
Exit stage left. Well, we do our best. You know, that's the important thing. Keep on going. Hopefully it's got a meaning after life. And don't forget, you know, life will continue with the Christmas Day special. You've just heard it there from Tom. Who you can find under the Christmas tree, maybe. But I'd arrest him if he actually did turn up at that situation, you know, personally. Or you can actually find him in the Siren Studio. Much better, much safer. That's the important thing, just in case you're wondering. We'll just play that one at a time. Just what he actually genuinely found under a Christmas tree.
Find Tom Stevens under your Christmas tree with the Siren Simply Jazz Show on Christmas Day.
Yeah, sorry, it's illegal. I meant to point that out to Tom. He's left the studio now, don't worry. But if you are suddenly found in if you find Tom Stevens in your house under your Christmas tree, call the police. It's all right, we've got Dave Milling, he'll be on the case. Don't worry, Nikki, I'm sure he doesn't have your address. Still, life continues. Marina Fiorato will be coming up very, very shortly as far as the programme is actually conceived. Hopefully we'll be joined. We're still waiting for Natalie Tuck to get here. You know, this could be crucial. Is your log looking well? No, he's going again. Is his log looking well? Yeah, this is a very critical scenario.
I've already tried to explain to Nikki.
Oh, the log is excellent. Yeah. And I have my hammer and chisel at the ready.
Hammer and chisel.
Careful, it will break them.
Sometimes you just think, why are we going down this particular routine? Somebody said they were going to bring cookies. Is that?
Yes, somebody did, didn't they?
Well, you did say they were going to bring it. Actually, is Katie Grimmison still there? No, she's gone. I just realised that we hadn't sort of taken off the phone line system there, so you know, clearly she decided to sort of leave us. Never mind. Ringo Starr up next with a photograph. All he has is a photograph. Take it away, Ringo. Not only have we got one writer in the studio, we've got two writers in the studio. Three, if you include, obviously, Ed Wellman doing his MA Community Radio dissertation. Forthcoming Attractions 2013, watch this space. And also another top writer on the phone, the extremely nice and genuinely wonderful soul who actually is Marina Fiorato. How are you, Marina?
I'm fine, congratulations on your marathon so far.
Well, you know, I feel I've been waiting for this moment, Marina, to actually connect with your good self. And after this, well, that's it, basically. We might as well just pack up and go home, you know, get in before the end of the world. Very crucial, exactly. So let's just jump straight into this festive scenario. Would you like to select the book in my right hand or the book in my left hand? Right hand or left hand? Where are you going to go?
Right hand.
Right hand. Okay. Page number between 1 and 450, please.
Wow. Well, It ought to be.
Yes.
I guess it ought to be 12, shouldn't it, really?
Really?
Or 21.
Oh, right. 12. Nice. See what you've done there.
Well, maybe 21, actually.
You're 12 or 21. I like that. You know, it's keeping on message. She's very good. Obviously, Marina has no idea which book I've actually selected. Only the people in the studio actually know, and not even the sort of listeners, because clearly we don't have a webcam set up from this point of view. So here it comes. Bewildered, I took myself behind the screen, playing the scene in my head. Something had gone badly awry, but I was more frightened by the sequel to the violent episode than the violence itself, the denial of his anger, the cover-up of any offence. I heard the artist leave the room and the door close behind him. Fear left with him. Then, in the safety of my solitude, hidden from sight behind the screen, I began to get angry. I stripped the dress off as if it burned me, so quickly that I ripped the delicate fish-scale fabric of one sleeve, and cared not. What a waste of a day! I could have been turning tricks in the piazza all daylight long, but now that night had fallen, the watchmen would arrest any whores that were not safely indoors in their own beds or someone else's. I'd lost an entire day's income, for I dared not ask for money from Botticelli now. As I pulled on my clothes, I fixed my eyes to the wooden panels before me, replaying the conversation in my head, trying to see where I'd erred. My memory failed me, but my eyes did not. One of the oaken panels had a darkened line along three sides. A secret door, no bigger than a Bible, which was a little open. I pulled it wide and took out the single rolled parchment that was within. I forgot my anger and confusion for a moment, for there before me was a copy of the painting. Perfect and complete, save for my own face. The graces were there, the tubby Cupid, the martial figure that was the image of Botticelli, the Madonna too, the other figures, and my faceless form in the silver dress. Even the same flowers dotted the grass. All that differed from the full-sized panel was the miniature form and the fact that there was a fine charcoal grid dividing the drawing into squares, as if the whole had been captured in a net. I don't think I've ever actually played a prostitute live on air, but, you know, it's nice to actually sort of open up a whole range of things from that particular perspective, and nice to see that obviously we're not blind when it comes to casting opportunities. It's the random choice thing. Of course, taken from which book, Marina?
Well, that'll be the Botticelli secret.
Oh, what can I say? A book about... I mean, I have to... No, probably just... No, the Venetian Contract, I think, probably just maybe edged ahead in terms of quality. But, you know, frankly, it is impossible not to find a Marina Fiorato text anything other than 10 out of 10. Absolutely sensational. Spot on.
Thank you.
All the way forward. So, as I say, in the studio we have writers of the Rockstar Romance, the creator of the Rockstar Romance trilogy, one of Chick Lit's finest authors, originally from Germany, but doing wonderful things now, especially when we actually played the Oberkirchen Children's Choir with the Happy Wanderer at the start of the show, mere sort of 10 or so hours ago. That, of course, is Nikki Wells. Nikki, Renaissance literature and Renaissance adventure. Any particular interest in that? Is it a sort of feel? Because I sense that if you could kind of have a mashup between Marina Fiorato's strong women characters and probably Sophie in Sophie's Turn and the Rockstar Trilogy, you could have probably an absolute... a bizarre scenario, but one which would be strangely wonderful at the same time.
Well, you mighty good morning, Marina. It's
good
very
morning.
Nice to meet you.
You too.
I have to confess, it's not normally my genre, but I do read far and wide, and I might just have to go and check this out, because I'm captivated by the excerpt you just read. It was really nice to do it blind without knowing, you know, what you were reading, so that was really intriguing. I think you could weave the two levels together. That would give you a lovely crossover, funky. I mean, it's been done, people have tried something like that.
Tried, but not necessarily to the level that I'm sure we could actually work on this basis. Phenomenal.
The whole afterlife, pre-life kind of thing. We can get that going.
Marina is a scholar. She's half Venetian. What's not to love? I've said that time and time again.
It's a gorgeous cover, I have to say. Absolutely beautiful.
And it's nice to see that even when we've shifted on from those wonderful and much lamented beautiful books, people, that clearly John Murray is equally aware that a good quality cover is absolutely essential. I mean, Ed, look at the quality on that cover. We talked last week, in fact, was it yesterday, about how wonderful it was to actually have Geoff Gainey's case, a nice little strokey book. You know, a book here you can actually stroke and sort of feel warm to and like this. But, you know, this is a sensuous delight.
Interesting, because this is precisely the shade of green that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah. You knew Marina, didn't you?
It's like pea green,
it's that
isn't
whole
it?
Mayan prophecy thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
And it all going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Lovely colour.
That's precisely the shade of green that Ed was alluding to in the
SFX magazine, same green.
And exactly in the SFX magazine. Not that the Venetian contract actually deals with science fiction, or I suppose time travel, but it's a whole new world. So, which text would you like Marina to actually talk about, Nikki? Would you like her to go about the Botticelli secret, or indeed the Venetian contract, or would you like to share some thoughts about some of her early work, like the Glassblower of Murano, or indeed the fabulous Madonna of the Almonds?
Oh, God, where to start? Well, you've got us started on the Botticelli secret, and I'm thoroughly intrigued. So tell me what inspired you to write it.
Oh, well, I was actually inspired by the Primavera painting itself.
Right.
And when I went to Florence when I was only 14 and I saw the painting in real life, as it were, and I was just looking at this character, Flora, and she was looking back at me, and they're kind of life-size, you know, they're so huge, these tableaus, and so the characters are sort of as big as you are. And I remember looking in her eyes and wondering what her secret was, because she has a really sort of cheeky look on her face. So it was really her that inspired me. I thought, well, I'll invite her down from the frame, you know, and she can be our guide through this world. So I actually made her the main character. So Flora is a Florentine prostitute called Luciana Vetra, and I had her be the model for Botticelli's Flora in the Primavera. So really, it was all from her and that cheeky look in her green eyes, really. That's how it all started.
Excellent.
It's always the cheeky look in the green eyes. I think you have to be very careful about
it.
Yeah. very critical on that setup. Geoff, any thoughts from yourself? I mean,
you've got me intrigued, Marina, because I'm just reading about the painting's secrets. So that's intrigued me, because that makes me want to read it.
It's amazing. Once you start looking at a painting that's sort of allegorical like that, it has so many things hidden in it. And I was sort of doing the real minutiae of, like, counting flowers and finding out what type of flowers they were, and, like, looking at the jewels in people's hair and how many plaits they had and what kind of shapes they were making with their arms and things like that. And when you start looking at a painting like that really closely, it's fascinating the kind of things that you come up with. You know, like, there's a snake on a staff and you kind of think, well, what's that about? And why is he only wearing, you know, why has he got flowers around one sandal? And why are there oranges over their heads? And once you start getting into it, I got slightly obsessed and just started looking at it really closely and kind of constructing this world and this secret within, which I won't reveal right now.
No, I mean, I might actually allow Nikki the opportunity of actually... Is that my signed copy of the...
It is your signed copy.
I don't know, I very rarely let this out of my sight in any way, shape or form, but I might, you know, in the spirit of things, allow you...
Oh, don't worry, I have an Amazon account. I'm perfectly capable of obtaining this book.
There we go.
They're all on Kindle, by the way.
Oh, Kindle, even better, there you go, that done deal.
I like books, cuddly books.
It's always a tough call, exactly. I mean, I have to say that Nikki's was the first book I ever read in full on a computer-based screen. No, I'm still not quite... You know, quite sort of set on that. You
don't
know.
Don't worry, you shall have a signed copy of Sophie's Run.
That's right. Different expectations and so on. Ed, anything you'd like to say, you know, about the observation and the writing process and the sort of sensational balance that we get together in the Marina Fiorato genre? As I think it's reached that stage. I feel it's a definite genre in itself.
How do you make yourself start, Marina? When you've got the ideas, and do you do a long-term plan and work to it, or do you just go for it?
Well, I definitely do a plan, because I know some writers write organically and just see where it takes them, but I always have to sort of know where I'm going to end up. Mm-hmm. So I do a chapter plan, and I do quite a detailed synopsis. But yeah, I usually can't wait to get started. I have to say, happily, I'm usually sort of raring to go. And then, of course, there's just sheer fear. Once you're under contract and you have to deliver, I mean, I'm usually on about a book a year, so I kind of have to get on with it, really. Yeah.
12 months, you've got to get those chapters sorted out. It's
very
important.
Yeah, exactly. So usually it breaks down until I have maybe half the year researching, actually, just because I'm always working with a certain period.
Mm.
So I have to do a lot of research, and then I'll write for 6 months. But no, I usually enjoy it, and I usually do get down to it quite easily, touch wood.
Oh, the magic is always going to be there. We're sending those positive vibes along the base. I forgot for a moment. In fact, Maureen, you're on Nikki's very first show.
That's right.
Yes, you see, we had connected together. So there we are. And obviously, Nikki hadn't disgraced herself. She's come back to actually sort of join in and become one of our official cake judges.
I'm working on the disgrace factor. Every show I try something else, but haven't been barred yet. Yeah. Came close, though.
Topless broadcasting is not going to happen, no matter what sort of excerpts we actually use on that particular routine. So there we are. I was talking about myself in that particular instance. Sorry, it's a different line. We did about sort of 4 a.m. this morning. I thought, no, I'll have the change elsewhere. I won't do it in the studio. It's not very good for any sort of reason. Moving on, any other questions, Geoff, you'd like to put to Marina Fiorotto?
When you do your research, Marina, do you actually go to the places or do you do it in another way?
No, I do try to go, actually, now, because when I first started writing, because it was sort of penniless, and I kind of did most of it from books, but actually because I was writing about Venice, it's somewhere I already knew well.
Mm-hmm.
But now I do tend to travel to the places that I'm writing about, because I just think it adds an extra dimension if you can have walked on those streets, you know. And just because I try and write sort of the whole, all five senses, and it helps you know how things sound and how things smell even, you know, and to give it a full picture. So yeah, I do travel now as much as I can, which is lovely.
No, it's a nice part, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly.
It's quality stuff. And as I say, it won't be too long before I'm sure those TV adaptations and movies will be working. As we said, hopefully, I can see if you say, I can't possibly comment on that, but there is a possibility the Botticelli Secret has been optioned and will be up as a series.
Yes, that's right. So Botticelli is going out to sort of TV, sort of a long-form TV series like Your Borgias or Tudors. And actually, the Venetian Contract has just been signed to be turned into a movie. So I've literally got the contract.
Yay!
In my office.
I think that's a round of applause.
So, yeah. But no, it's always, you know, there's been a lot of talks and lots of negotiations, but we actually are at the contract stage now, which is fantastic.
And we always have been there from every step of the way, as
I
you know.
I know, yes,
Marina.
You've been very supportive, so thank you very much, and to all your listeners.
We recognise talent, that's the important thing, and we see that through right through the whole base, effectively. So, a couple of crucial things to start off with. Have you had a reasonably interesting Myathon chat with us on the programme today?
I have, and I'm very pleased we're all still here, now anyway.
Exactly.
I'm not actually sure when the cut-off is. Is it supposed to be midnight, or are we supposed to all be gone by now?
41 minutes, as our precise German Teutonic sort of law say. 41 Minuten.
Ah, sehr gut.
That's exactly.
Oh, gosh, so we've got just over half an hour.
Yeah, go make a cup of tea quick.
We figured we'd wrap up this piece now, just in case you wanted, like, half an hour to sort of spend with the family.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Because I'm a consummate professional, we thought we'd work our way through that. All being well, assuming everything else gets sorted out, will you be with us again in 2013?
Certainly. Try and stop me. Thank you very much.
Marina Fiorotto will return. Now, crucial question. David Sowell, it sure brings out the love in your eyes, or the loose salute, and it's a beautiful thing. Which one would you like, Marina?
Was that loose loot?
Loose salute, as in loose salute. Yeah.
I was thinking you were going for the medieval.
It was very tempted. I was, we'll probably squeeze in a little bit of that and into various routines.
Let's do that one anyway.
Okay.
Thank you.
One, two, three, four. Fly like a bird.
It's a beautiful thing. Samantha Viner, we hope you get well. Gather you got a bug. Never mind, life continues. Or maybe not in 40 minutes. In which case, just ensure that's duly put together. William Sitwell, we're going to be connecting with. It looks as though we're going to be delayed on this cake-off challenge because I can see what's going to happen. We'll do the judging.
possibly Natasha Turney actually scores highly, wins the whole routine. Natalie Tuck arrives, been delayed by traffic. Could be a nightmare. I just don't want to go there because, and Ed, of course, you know, could be a scenario that I just don't want to even consider. So, to take us round to our descriptive artists that actually are Nikki and Joff, and they can, we can, we might actually invite you to bring the cake in and you can describe it to William. We'll do that. I don't think we'll be able to sort of get it up online. I suppose technically we could, but maybe, I don't know, Ed, are you touching things there?
Yes, I am. We've got a little shout out to do.
Have we? Hmm. Who's this to then?
It is to,
yes,
Dave Milling.
Not the Dave Milling laughing policeman, Dave Milling.
That's right, he's up and about. Sorry. It wasn't quite as subtle as that, actually, last night, was it?
No, it wasn't.
We're getting quite quiet now.
Shh.
Dave and his son, Peter, playing with the train set, tuned
in. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Peter. Dave. And hello, Dave.
Daddy.
Loving the apocalypse that is Siren FM computer.
Oh, yeah. Siren FM computer, exactly. Here's Michael Nesmith. And of course, he did his stuff with the monkeys as well. OK, right, it is time now to actually move to this particular part of the programme where we say, without any shame whatsoever,
the finest in gourmet criticism and foodie delights, and the author of A History of Food in 100 Recipes. Quite clearly a question of quality personified. It's William Sitwell on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Yes, hello William, how are you?
Yeah, very well. Good. Guess what I'm doing?
Preparing for the end of the world?
Yes, and you know how I'm doing that.
How are you preparing for the end of the world, William?
Pushing a shopping trolley around Waitrose.
Nice. That's what we like to see. Bit of sort of traditional British approach there. Other supermarkets are available, but it's nice to see that as editor of Waitrose Food, you also push a shopping trolley around the place as well. It's nice.
I live and breathe the dream.
Exactly, we said that. Now,
up until the end of the world. How long have we got now?
I think about 25 minutes.
30 minutes and 24 seconds.
13 minutes.
21, yeah. 20.
Fine,
20.
Good. We're counting down as we speak.
Well, how many astronomical events occurred that suggest that actually this is, the prophecy is actually taking place?
Well, the Lincoln Brayford pool has actually risen substantially.
That will be the pool of the planets,
the pool of
lifting
the planets,
the water,
sucking it away. It's amazing. I feel a sort of slight sort of, you know, lightheartedness myself, really. Or is that lightheadedness?
That would be because you've been in here for something
lack of oxygen, I suspect, as well, Alex.
Yes. There is the voice of our managing editor, Andrew David, who's stepping into the role that Jane Southall, the director of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, had to vacate because she was poorly and lost her voice.
Yes, I understand. Yeah. Losing your voice for a 24-hour, 25-hour marathon.
Get well soon, Jane.
Yes, please do.
Hopefully you'll be set for the future of
the country.
Do I have
to speak in a posh country accent? Hello.
No.
Welcome.
I can do lots of accents.
So, the way we're going to work this is because we have two fabulous writers here, Joff Ganey and Nikki Wells. They're going to describe the cake visually, and you can obviously work through that. On the basis of their descriptions, given that he's an ace gastronomic expert and writer as well, William Sitwell will effectively comment on that. So, off with cake number one, please, Nikki.
Okay, cake number one is an oblong, roundy shape. It is quite brown in places with a lovely dusting of ice. It's been cut, so I can see that it... Oh, gosh, there's a holly leaf on the side fallen off. I can see that it's a sort of a spongy type thing. It looks quite light. It seems to have jam in. Let me see if I can... smells delicious. Smells fresh out of the oven. Joff, what do you think?
Yes, totally edible.
Anything to add to the description? It's kind of, the presentation is...
It reminds me of the things we used to get at school, which was called jam roly-poly.
Oh!
and well it's... But my our school jam roly-polies never looked as tasty as that. They always looked a bit sort of... as though the cook had done them as a last resort the night before.
OK, that's cake number one. Have you got any questions you want to put to the team, William, about the descriptions there? Anything
it looks very festive. Yeah.
I think what would be helpful, I mean, OK, it's oblong, it's round, it's brown, it's cakey, it reminds you of school. Can you tell me what the cake is, or is that asking too many questions?
Well, we're doing a kind of a blind cake testing here, so unless we actually...
No, you're not wearing blindfolds.
We don't know whose it is. I'm not familiar with this type. Sorry, German background. I'm failing miserably here.
Your particular place of choosing would actually sell this, I think, as a... sort of erring towards a Yule log, but yes. It's not got chocolate on it. So it's one of those very careful things you have to roll. Sponge base, you have roll with baking parchment so that it doesn't break. And I've seen...
Okay. Let me come in here briefly, because I find, as someone who sort of critiques food and talks about food, that actually describing the taste and flavour can be helpful.
Is this a point where we eat?
I think this is critical to the whole sort of essence of the whole thing.
Well, it is.
Yeah. Right, shall I do the deed then? There is a knife here. I'm wielding a knife again.
Well, very good.
I tell you something.
It's
very crunchy. Yes, it's got a resistance to the knife as you go to slice it.
Oh, that might just be me being
the
very
frosting.
Clumsy.
Okay, it's the frosting.
It's very crumbly. Right, I shall lift some of this out before we make a big mess here in the studio.
Uh-huh, yeah, very good. Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Hostess with the mostest skills here.
Surely Mr. Mills should come in wearing gloves and bearing platters.
Right. Okay.
I would have thought so, actually. In fact,
I know he's just gone to another supermarket locally to buy some...
I'd like to try this delicious...
Okay. I like crunchy stuff, so I'm going to take the crunchy bit.
The tasting is taking place at this moment.
Sure. I'm now putting it in my mouth.
Are you taking part, Alex?
No, I can't, because
I know,
it would be too biased of me to actually turn around and say, that's the one you've got to go for. I couldn't possibly, you know. There we are. It's the ultimate sacrifice, William, as I'm sure you'll attest to.
Well, I went to the dentist yesterday. This is a challenge.
Prolonged silence.
Oh, it's
this is... No, going back to... Now, having described it as a sort of jam roly-poly, jam roly-polies, of course, are normally a soft, moist sponge.
I see.
This is quite quite different, and in that sense, my vision, expecting it to be soft, and my taste and the crunch is... Not a challenge. It's actually very nice. I love crunchy things.
It's an unexpected crunchiness.
It is. And the jam, I think, has sort of gooed out and has done that thing that jam, when it's baked, does. It goes sort of most treacly.
And it's got that gooey, lovely, fruity, crunchy thing
with a biscuit,
going on.
Crusty experience.
It's a lovely experience, that. Mm. I think you could probably market this quite well.
Okay. So, any other questions, William, or can we move on to the second entry?
I think you should move on as quickly as you can.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Right, okay.
Go for it, Nikki.
I have no idea. All right, second cake is round. Traditional shape is covered in yellow icing with yellow little sugary stars. Mm. It's got a pink glittery sugar candy cross on the top with a bowl made out of marshmallows. Mm. It definitely looks like a ladies' kind of cake because it's pink and yellow. Made by a lady, possibly for a little girl.
Oh.
It's definitely got layers going on, but we can't see what they are unless we cut into it because it's completely covered in this beautiful icing.
Taste test, I think. Yeah.
Anyone else like to add anything to the? Oh, hang on. Smell. I can't get there. I'm going to have to rely on Josh.
Is going to smell. Smelling a cake is an interesting one, unless it's very highly cinnamonized or nutmeg.
Is that something you'd say is useful, William? Using the olfactory sensors to actually say, yeah, let's smell this cake? Cake sniffing? What's the position on that?
Look, sometimes I've tasted food and critiqued it on the basis of what it sounds like.
We ought to tap the other sponge then.
Okay, I'm tapping.
Use all your senses.
Hang on, I'm going to do the...
She's now tapping it. Well, it's a good sound for...
Can you hear that?
Sounds as though it's got an abdomen to be proud of, I would have thought.
It's got a certain hollowness to it, which suggests there's still some air in it, so I'm expecting light and fluffy.
I think you've been up too long.
I've been watching MasterChef. Right, shall we cut? Cut. Shall I cut something with the lovely pink?
Should Natalie Tuck get here in the next 50 minutes or so, it could put the whole thing into all sorts of things.
The knife... I ought to describe the knife is sinking. Very sort of...
Through.
There's a sort of voluptuousness about this, isn't
there? Bear in mind that our wonderful people...
It has a sort... Now, this is interesting. Just holding it there, the colour of the... a sponge is similar to the colour of the sponge of the roll we've just had.
Astounding.
And there seems to be jam in it as well.
Yes.
Why does everybody put raspberry jam? Because it gets into my fillings.
It'll be seedless.
I want strawberry, so it's big.
Point to wear in mind. Yep.
All right, then. OK, cut this into bits.
Feel free to interject, William, with any comments you wish to make.
I think I'll remain silent.
Fair enough. Yes.
So, generous amounts of ice here. Ooh.
I love the pink frosting. That is such a nice... It's a contrast to the very, very soft, creamy-coloured... I suppose it's
butter
a...
icing.
It's an icing, yes. Mm. That is rather nice.
So, OK, William, from the descriptions you've heard, which one would you say would be in the lead in terms of overall shaping up for the Christmas Cake Off challenge?
Well, it's really... It's sort of pink frosting versus oblong brownness.
Yes. No, oblong brownness with white dusting. It does look very Christmassy, the other cake.
See, I think...
I think I'm going to go for the popular vote in terms of... I think that the cake number two so far seems to be making people smile, and it certainly... I can feel more warmth of enthusiasm coming down the line. So
more warmth,
cake number two, as far as I'm concerned, is in the lead at the moment. So
let me interject, then, because I actually don't think we're judging like with like, because I'm veering towards... The round sponge, which my mum used to make sponges like nobody else in the world, as everybody's mum did. That was her signature dish. The log, let's call it a crispy Yule log, I think it's more of a dessert or a pudding.
I was going to mention custard.
I was going to say put something with it, clotted but I didn't cream, want to brandy,
custard,
butter,
in case people didn't
something
like
that.
Custard.
Warm that, I think we judge that as a great pudding. Mm. And this is me being Solomon,
yes.
And we judge the cake as a great cake.
Very good. William?
Well, my big question is actually where's the fennel? But that's the personal
issue. You've lost the plot, haven't you?
No, I found it.
Yeah,
it's down aisle six.
Yeah.
Can we have which one is currently in the lead then, and which one won?
From a cake-off.
Yes.
I think it has
from
to be
from the cake-off. It is the
round.
It
one.
Is the round yellow
but
one.
But I think we need to move the parameters here.
Okay. Well, I think that's fine. You know, bear in mind, obviously, it's our fine folk, Lizzie and company, in the press offices will be sort of receiving some of these cakes as well. We'll send over to that whole basis.
That's if he gets
William,
that far.
It's been truly wonderful once again to wrap up 2012. In a myathon way with your good self. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us here on the Midwick Drive Myathon for Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's first community radio station?
I think it's energised me as I trip down the aisles. Thank you.
Excellent. That's right, exactly.
Well, now, if you need a cake, we've got some excellent cake here.
Well, no, my last question is, where are the cooked chestnuts?
Roasting on an open fire.
Exactly.
Oh, they're in the second aisle down as you come in from the start, turn left, and then on your right-hand side, I think.
Yep. Got it. Thank you.
Sorted. You see, there we are. Never let it be said, William.
No,
we don't
riding
provide
the trolley.
You with exactly. We provide you with a whole range of key things.
Like
William Sitwell is not a trolley rider.
No, he does the self checkout.
He might hunt boar, but he's not a trolley rider.
All good, because this guy was riding a trolley and he fell over and bashed his nose.
Please, was that Jamie Oliver again? Never mind.
Less than 20 minutes to go, ladies.
Exactly.
Gentlemen.
Precisely. So I take it, William. Assuming we're spared, to use that classic Sarah Kennedy phrase, you'll be with us in 2013?
I think so. We've got 6 minutes to live.
There we are. Exactly. We'll be with us in a different form of the whole thing, etc. Whether Malcolm Tomlinson arrives to sort through things, but as it stands at present, we've got the yellow cake in the lead. Might be another last-minute entry that could do all sorts of things. William, obviously, we appreciate you won't be able to feed on that. We'll put photographs up on Facebook. Some of them have already gone up, not of the cakes as yet. That's pretty much it for 2012. We'll see you in the next millennia sort of thing, Mayan calendar thing. Is that all right?
Yep, look forward to it. And happy Christmas to you and your listener.
And same to you.
And same to you.